From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, the execution of Larry Swearingen.
If they kill me, I won't be the first innocent man that's been killed. I won't be the last. But it doesn't mean I'm going to roll over and just let them do what they want to do without a fight.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. On Wednesday, August 21st, the state of Texas was preparing to execute Larry Swearingen. Swearingen was convicted of the abduction, rape, and murder of Melissa Trotter, a 19-year-old college student in Montgomery County. In Huntsville, Texas, outside the Walls Unit Prison, which houses the execution chamber, a group of protesters have gathered as time ticks down to 6 p.m., the assigned hour of Swearingen's death. They're here for every execution. These 30 or so demonstrators are opposed to the death penalty on moral grounds, and they're holding signs condemning the practice. They're working to have the death penalty abolished. Swearingen was convicted in 2000, and since then he has been given 6 execution dates. 5 of them, the courts have stepped in and issued stays, allowing him to continue his appeals and keep trying to prove to the legal system that he is actually innocent. More appeals have been filed on this day, trying to once again get the courts to intervene. But at this hour, it was up to the U.S. Supreme Court.
We just got word from his brother that the Supreme Court has rejected the appeal, so I guess the execution will take place.
Oh my God.
Inside the Walls unit, the process of executing Swearingen was moving forward. At 6:21, he was taken from his holding cell and led to the death chamber. Simultaneously, the witnesses, Melissa Trotter's family, and the media were brought into the prison from the visitor center across the street, with the protesters' bullhorn echoing off the red brick walls.
Witnesses are crossing the street. We know that Texas is getting ready to entertain its murder of an innocent man.
Carrie Blakinger, the criminal justice reporter for the Houston Chronicle, was there.
He kept his eyes closed the entire time. Like, from the moment that the witnesses had walked into the witness rooms, he had his eyes screwed shut the whole time. I thought for a moment it looked like he, you know, was maybe sort of holding back tears. But, you know, I mean, I don't know. His jaw kind of quivered at one point. But I thought for a moment he was going to speak, but then he didn't. He didn't say much when he did. He said, "Lord, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing." And that was his statement. Then, you know, they started the lethal injection process. And at that point, he started narrating his own death. Like, he said that he could hear it, and then he said that he could taste it, and that he could feel it burning in his right arm and not in his left, which would make sense because they do hook them up to IVs on both sides. But I think they only actually use one, and one is like a backup. But he said all this in like the course of about a minute. I mean, I think we walked in around 6:34, and you know, he very quickly said what he had to say. The dose started at 6:35. I think he fell silent by like 6:36.
After the execution, Jeremy Diesel, Director of Communications for the Texas Department of Criminal Justice, spoke to the media. This audio is from the Montgomery County Police Reporter.com.
This evening, the state of Texas executed Larry Swearingen. The official time of death was 6:47 p.m. He was the 12th offender executed in the United States this year, the 4th in the state of Texas, and there are 11 scheduled executions still on the calendar for this year here in Texas.
Kelly Blackburn of the Montgomery County District Attorney's Office, which prosecuted Swearingen 19 years ago, gave a statement to the media.
Today at 6:47, the man that kidnapped, raped, and killed Melissa Trotter was put to death by lethal injection. You know, there's been a lot said about this case. It's been a long time coming. It's been a long road. The courts, I think, got it right. They were extremely strong in their opinions about this case. And I think if you read those opinions, you'll find out that the right man in this was executed today. An innocent man was not executed at all. And I stand here today more sure of that than I've ever been. But today needs to be about Melissa. It's now about her. Larry Swearingen needs to be removed from the annals of history, as far as I'm concerned. And we need to talk about Melissa. along with all the other victims that Larry Swearingen left in his wake. There were four other females that had either been kidnapped, raped, shot at, abducted by Larry Swearingen, and they need to be remembered too. A bad man got what he deserved tonight. To his dying death, his last words were manipulating everybody. I mean, as he sat and tried to describe what he was feeling, that was what was more important to him than actually telling the truth and going to his resting bed without a conscience. But Larry Swearingen doesn't have a conscience. Larry Swearingen was every mom and dad's worst nightmare. You know, he was someone that could look you right in the eye and stab you in the back or strangle you with a pair of pantyhose.
My name is Larry Ray Swearingen. I'm on death row, scheduled to be murdered August 21st for a crime I did not commit.
Swearingen never stopped saying that during his almost 20 years on death row.
You have faulty forensic science that's upholding this conviction, and now they want to murder me to make sure the conviction doesn't come undone.
After 2 decades locked up behind bars, Swearingen became pudgy, bald, and his skin was a pasty white. He's almost unrecognizable from the photos taken before Melissa Trotter was murdered. In that time, he has never stopped insisting on his complete innocence.
No, I did not take Melissa's life. We were friends then, we're friends now, we will always be friends.
But the police and prosecutors who worked to convict Swearingen of capital murder and who never stopped working to have him eventually executed say that is a lie, one of Swearingen's many lies. Kelly Blackburn with the Montgomery County District Attorney's Office.
There's no other perpetrator out there. There's no other boogeyman. There's no other serial killer that killed Melissa Trotter. It's Larry Swearingen.
Blackburn insisted that all of the evidence that was collected pointed to Swearingen and no one but Swearingen.
There is a mountain of evidence that connects Larry Swearingen to the death of Melissa Trotter that he was convicted on, besides science.
Forensic science is central to solving murders. Prosecutors rely on it every day. But in the Melissa Trotter case, some of the forensic science appeared to contradict the prosecution's narrative. There was no DNA that connected Swearingen to that murder. In fact, there was DNA blood evidence found under the fingernails of Melissa Trotter that did not point at Swearingen.
The only DNA evidence they have is male blood under the fingernails. It excludes me.
And then there is the problem of the body's timeline decomposition, which some say proves that Swearingen could not have been the killer. However, Blackburn says there is that wealth of circumstantial evidence in the case that points directly at Swearingen.
He was seen with her 2 days before the murder. He was talking to his colleagues and to his coworkers about going and having lunch with her and having her for lunch, quotation marks. He was going to eat her for lunch. He was seen with her just hours before her disappearance, before she was ever seen again, at the college where she was going to college at. Her lighter that she uses to light her cigarettes was found at his house. The cigarettes that she smokes was found at his house. Larry Swearingen's wife doesn't smoke. Larry Swearingen doesn't smoke. The ligature that was the murder weapon in this case was half of a pantyhose. The other ripped half of that pantyhose was found in the trash at Larry Swearingen's house.
Swearingen admitted that if you only listen to the prosecutor's narrative, then he sounds guilty. But he said in a death row interview that the prosecution consistently used junk science and exaggerated the evidence to pin a murder on him while dismissing the legitimate forensic science that proved that it was impossible for him to be Melissa Trotter's killer.
You know, it's a sexual assault, but the evidence you have is from somebody else. So I don't know how I'm supposed to have done this.
It was December 8, 1998, that 19-year-old Melissa Trotter went missing in Willis, Texas, north of Houston. She was an outgoing college student last seen alive at the student center at Lone Star College, Montgomery County campus. Swearingen at the time was a 27-year-old electrician. He was driving a stolen red pickup truck, and he had a history of problems with the law.
I was a screw-up. I was a violent screw-up. And 2 plus 2, you get the wrong conclusion. Hey, he's done these things before. Look over here. Yeah, we've got a good suspect here. Immediately, right off the bat, I was the only suspect. They focused on me.
Swearingen says he was basically a good old boy. Blackburn calls that an insult to good old boys.
I was a good old boy. I was convicted because I thought I was too smart for my own good. in July 10th, 1992. It was presented that he shot at and kidnapped his then wife at knife point, sexually assaulted her at a remote location in the woods. September of 1992, he was convicted of aggravated assault. In 1993, he broke into his neighbor's house, went through their lingerie, cut the leggings off a pair of pantyhose, and took those. In October 6, 1993, he was convicted of burglary. It's while he was on probation for that case, he tied up, gagged, and sexually assaulted another female and forced her to put on pantyhose. In 1997, his current wife that he was married to when he murdered Melissa Trotter, while she was 9 months pregnant, he choked her unconscious because he believed that she was cheating on him. He had another former fiance of his in August 26, 1998, that he handcuffed, choked her, sexually assaulted her. And then September the 3rd of 1998, he abducted another female at gunpoint, forced her to drive off into a dirt road in the National Forest before he finally released her. To say that he was a wild, good old boy, it's definitely an understatement. And I think it's insulting to all of the victims prior to Melissa Trotter and Melissa Trotter, if that's the way he wants to refer to himself. It's laughable.
Swearingen immediately became the suspect in the Melissa Trotter missing person case. They had been seen together on the college campus that day she went missing. 3 days after her disappearance, Swearingen was arrested on outstanding traffic warrants. He was behind bars ever since. While being questioned by investigators, he told them he didn't know who Melissa Trotter was and that he had never spoken to her.
I don't even know the girl. Up to that point, I never knew the girl even existed.
Well, why would she have your pager number?
She asked me, was there a way to get a hold of my sister? When I walked up to the marina, she asked me, hey, aren't you Becky's brother? And I said, yes.
You had never talked to her before that day?
No, ever. Never.
On January 2nd, 1999, 25 days after her disappearance, the body of Melissa Trotter was found by hunters in a remote location in the Sam Houston National Forest. Her body was tossed on top of a pile of bushes. She had been strangled with a leg segment cut from a pair of pantyhose. It was now a murder investigation, and the evidence against Swearingen was piling up. Police searched his truck. They found strands of Melissa Trotter's hair. Swearingen then changed his story. He said she had been in his truck many times.
We were dating. We were friends with benefits.
And then there was another category of evidence in which the prosecution had an abundance of. That was Swearingen's own behavior.
Former girlfriend of yours testified that you had called her that evening and told her that you were in trouble and the police might be coming after you.
I had a stolen truck. So yeah, the police were after me.
Why would you call her, though, and tell her that?
I was trying to get in her pants.
While Swearingen was in the county jail, there was a strange twist in this case. A letter written in lousy Spanish claimed that Swearingen was innocent. In the letter, there were details about the case that had not been in the news. The author of this letter said the real killer was a Hispanic male. This letter could exonerate Swearingen, except for the fact that he wrote it.
Yeah, when they started printing in the paper, they were going to kill me, yeah. That's what prompted the Spanish letter. I was scared to death about it.
Swearingen said he knew those incriminating details because he had the autopsy report and the crime scene photos.
This isn't anything that the killer would know. This is what a dummy like me knows when I had the evidence or the material in front of me.
Prosecutors said they had plenty of evidence that tied Swearingen to the Melissa Trotter murder. There was a cell phone tower that pinged him near where the body was found. A match of the murder weapon pantyhose was found in Swearingen's trailer. Polyester fibers from the truck were on Trotter's coat. Swearingen and his lawyers countered. They said that cell phone tower pings are not considered legitimate evidence.
Forensic experts don't even use that science anymore, because it doesn't track people like they want to. Federal courts have already declared this is junk.
Claims of a pantyhose match are overblown and inaccurate.
A pair of pantyhose that shows up at my house after my arrest, after the police have searched my house under suspicious circumstances.
Polyester fibers are polyester.
Fibers are not unique to anything. They're mass produced. So when you say, hey, this fiber here is unique, no, it's not. It's similar.
And then there is the evidence that the prosecution just dismissed. Blood under Trotter's fingernails did not match Swearingen's DNA. And the most curious item of all is that Trotter's body was only slightly decomposed. Experts have testified that it appears that Trotter's body was in the woods for no more than 2 weeks. That's when Swearingen was locked up in the county jail. Blackburn says none of that matters. He said Swearingen is the killer who has proven time and time again that he will do and say anything to avoid paying for his crime.
The evidence that was presented in the totality of everything that we're looking at and the picture that was painted for this jury as to what they were to evaluate that put him before, during, and after this murder, that's what convicted him.
I hate to say it, everybody wants to live. I mean, it's a fight or flight process. When you're looking there and you're looking at the clock and they're saying, hey, I'm going to die this day, nobody wants to die for a crime that they didn't commit.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're looking at the execution of Larry Swearingen, who was convicted of the abduction, rape, and murder of Melissa Trotter. There are questions if Texas executed an innocent man. The prosecution continues to say there was an overwhelming amount of circumstantial evidence that convicted Swearingen. For example, in Swearingen's trailer, police found a pack of cigarettes, Melissa Trotter's brand, and her cigarette lighter. Prosecutors say Swearingen and his wife were not smokers. However, his wife testified that she was indeed a smoker, as were other members of the Swearingen family.
Yes, she did. She was a smoker.
James Riding, Swearingen's lawyer for his appeals, said the brand of cigarettes was Marlboro Lights. Marlboro is the most popular brand of cigarettes in the world. And of the cigarette butts left in the trailer, none of them had Melissa Trotter's DNA. It's impossible to smoke a cigarette and not leave DNA behind.
The thing about the cigarettes is, again, another trumped-up evidence. They had no idea where those cigarettes claimed, but they said, oh, we can look at some markings on the bottom and we believe it's from a nearby gas station. As if that matters. Finally, they had a lighter too, and they claimed, well, this is just the type of lighter that she used, and it's just another common object. And of course, you would think you'd have some DNA on that lighter because you're flicking it with your thumb. They tested it, nothing comes up. So this is just smoke and mirrors, the business with the cigarettes.
Another problem that the prosecution had was explaining the lightly decomposed condition of Melissa Trotter's body and establishing a time of death that didn't exclude Swearingen. Establishing a time of death is a critical piece of evidence that in a murder investigation can lead to arresting and convicting the perpetrator or exonerating someone who was wrongfully accused. So getting it right can mean life or death for someone like Larry Swearingen. There has been a significant amount of time, money, research dedicated to learning exactly how a human body breaks down after death in order to gather precise data for forensic science. To find out more about that, I went to a place in the Texas Hill Country nicknamed the Body Ranch. Scattered across an open field under the hot Texas sun, there are dozens of human bodies. Their skin is blackened. Their flesh is half eaten by bugs and varmints. They are in varying states of decay. This isn't the scene from a horror movie. This is science.
What we're interested in doing is getting some kind of idea of the rate of decomposition and then the pattern of decomposition.
Professor Daniel Westcott is in the Department of Anthropology at Texas State University. He is the director of their Forensic Anthropology Center.
We typically have about 60 to 70 bodies out at any given time.
This is one of seven outdoor body composition laboratories in the United States and the largest such forensic research facility in the world.
What you want to try to do is have some kind of baseline information about what's going on and then alter a single thing to look at how that affects it.
Here, human cadavers are left out in the open and carefully monitored for patterns of decomposition. That data is used to train forensic experts so when they look at a murder victim, they can read the body in the crime scene to gain an understanding of the time of death.
It's not guesswork. So what we're doing, we do lots of bodies so we have a good idea of the normal variation.
In the murder of Melissa Trotter, establishing when she died is central to the conviction of Larry Swearingen. Trotter went missing in Willis, Texas on December 8, 1998. Her body was found 25 days later on January 2nd in the Sam Houston National Forest. Swearingen had been arrested and jailed on December 11th 3 days after Trotter was last seen alive. Swearingen says he didn't kill her, and based on the condition of Trotter's body, forensic experts say there are questions about his guilt.
The climate, weather temperature, the data, the environment where it was found, looked at all the weights, the organs, looked at everything. They said Melissa died within 10 to 12 days of her body being discovered.
The prosecution's case depends on establishing that Trotter died before Swearingen was jailed. The forensic evidence for that narrative is weak at best.
Science can only tell you so much.
Kelly Blackburn is with the Montgomery County District Attorney's Office, which prosecuted Swearingen.
You have to look at the whole story. No matter how good the scientist is, for whatever reason they're giving their opinion on, whether and how unbiased they claim to be, there's still interpretation.
James Riding, the attorney for Swearingen, says the time of death is a major problem for the state's case. He says the bottom line is, if Melissa Trotter's body was in the forest for 25 days, it should have been in terrible condition.
The body weighed the same the day that girl disappeared as it did on the slab, and it was left out in the open in the Texas woods, a woods that is filled, as everyone knows, with vultures, with raccoons, with wild pigs. There should not have been much left of that body at all after 25 days, let alone 105 pounds out of 105 pounds.
But Westcott from the Body Ranch said some bodies don't always decompose the way you'd expect them to. Sometimes there are surprises.
It does occur. So typically when we get one that is a little bit off of what we expect, it usually turns out to be that they were on a heavy dose of antibiotics at the time, or chemotherapy.
Melissa Trotter was not undergoing chemotherapy. I asked her mother if Melissa was on antibiotics at the time, and Sandy Trotter said she didn't remember, but she does believe that Swearingen's defenders are making too much about the condition of her daughter's body.
They also don't bring up that they said it was cold and rainy, muddy, you know, so the decomposition of her body would have been drastically compromised by that. You know, those cold days, there were, I mean, hundreds of people that were out there tromping through the mud and cold and rain and all at the time. So that says enough. The weather was just terrible. One day it was warm, one day it was cold. So I have no doubt.
The Trotter family had been dealing with the death of Melissa and the legal process against her convicted killer, Larry Swearingen, for 20 years.
Very frustrating for our family and horrific for the 92-year-old grandfather. He will be there viewing, you know, Swearingen executed.
Before he was eventually executed, he had been given 5 previous death dates, but each time the courts stepped in for either questions about the evidence or technical problems with the paperwork.
You know, we've been delayed quite a few times.
Sitting across from me in the death row visitor area, separated by a thick pane of glass, Swearingen told me he was aware that Texas had a history of executing people who could be innocent.
If they kill me, I won't be the first innocent man that's been killed. I won't be the last. They killed Todd Willingham on junk science. I'm probably no different.
Cameron Todd Willingham was executed in 2004 for the arson deaths of his children. It's believed, although not officially acknowledged, that he was convicted on the misrepresentation of evidence and that Texas executed an innocent man. But Sandy Trotter says she knows that Swearingen is her daughter's killer.
I 100% believe that the evidence is just overwhelming, and the appeals court has even said that, with like the giant elephant sitting in the corner of the room.
She said she believes there should be appeals for death penalty cases, but she says Swearingen abused that process.
I think it really needs to be evaluated. He's had way too many appeals. I mean, they look at one little microscopic DNA something rather than looking at the whole picture.
Robert Dunham of the Death Penalty Information Center says the appeals process for Swearingen took a long time because of all of the flaws in the evidence that was used to convict him in the first place.
So they don't consider, in Mr. Swearingen's case, the seven different types of junk science. They look at it one piece at a time and rule it out, and in the end what you have is a delay of 19 years and the possibility, a very strong possibility, that an innocent person may be executed.
Trying to use the appeals process to prove actual innocence is extremely difficult, and without some exculpatory slam dunk evidence, it's almost impossible. The best way to win an appeal is not to need one, that is, get that not guilty verdict in the original trial. Of course, that's not what happened with Swearingen.
The case against him looked very strong.
Veteran newspaper reporter, now retired, Harvey Rice covered Swearingen's original murder trial for the Houston Chronicle.
Every day it just piled up. One nail sealing the case shut. The prosecution brought out that hammer and just drove that nail in there. They had all these witnesses that had heard him make statements, and all seemed to lead to support the prosecution's case.
He said the lawyers for the defense seemed to be doing the best job that they could under the circumstances.
I thought they were very engaged.
But the case against Swearingen was very strong, based on all of that circumstantial evidence that's now been ruled to be overblown, misrepresented, and downright junk science. The big question mark about the body decomposition was barely considered during the trial.
Medical examiner from Harris County came in and said that it was, in her opinion, she died the day she disappeared.
But Rice said what sunk Swearingen's case more than anything else was Swearingen himself. The defendant ignored his lawyer's advice and insisted that he take the stand.
He seemed to have an idea that he could somehow convince the jurors that this, or explain away this evidence, and he failed miserably. The prosecution just flayed him. They asked him, was that a lie? And he had to admit that some of the things he said were lies. He says, okay, that's one lie. Then he goes to another one, and he just was going, okay, that's two lies. And by the time the prosecution was done with him, he had no credibility whatsoever in the eyes of the jury.
Swearingen admitted that testifying in his own defense was a mistake.
I was arrogant. My attorneys told me not to do it, but
it took the jury a little more than 3 hours to come back with the guilty verdict. Looking for a positive outcome to all of this, Melissa Trotter's mother, Sandy, says the death of her daughter was able to stop a dangerous man before he hurt and killed someone else.
Unfortunately, Melissa was just wrong place at the wrong time. Good old boy from Willis talking to her, and she was just, you know, a very caring person, just too trusting. I very much believe he is very evil, and if he hadn't already killed anybody else, he would have. And so she definitely has stopped him from hurting anybody else.
Larry Swearingen released a final statement just before he was executed to the Washington Post. It included his insistence that he was innocent and a searing criticism of the Texas judicial system. Quote, I feel certain that my death will be a catalyst to change the insane legal system of Texas, which would allow this to happen. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org. You could also write directly on our show page at our website at tpr.org. That's where you can listen to past Texas Matters episodes, and you can find us wherever you download your podcast. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.